Hello and welcome back to another episode in our series Tefillah, the Past, the Practical, and the Profound, where we talk about the history, the halachot, and the meaning of Jewish prayer. There are source sheets up on the... thank you very much. There are source sheets up on the banister. So, last week we spoke about Purim, and I realized that we haven't really done... Thank you. Any halachic topics in a while. So I figured we'd talk about some halachas today. And in doing so, really stumble upon, deliberately, a fascinating chapter of the Shulchan Aruch and of Jewish rite and ritual. Next week, I think, or next time we meet, in 2 weeks, Bezras Hashem, we'll talk about some of the practical significance of this in some surprising ways. I think maybe we'll have a shiur on stained glass windows in synagogues, which, despite its ubiquity, is not at all clear cut. No pun intended. But today we'll introduce the topic. We'll talk about praying in a room without windows. Thanks again. So, when we say we're going to have a shiur on praying in a room without windows, what do we mean by that? What do we mean by that? Actually, we'll take a step back for a second. There's a picture on the front page of your source sheets. Does anybody recognize it or know where it is?
Jerusalem.
Yeah, is it Jerusalem?
The Portuguese. That's the
Yeah, I don't think it's in Israel. I think it's. Are you sure? I'm not sure. I actually don't know. This was an open-ended question. I don't know where this synagogue is. I put it on the sheet as a placeholder because the truth is, it doesn't look a little bit. But I put it on the source sheet as a placeholder because it could be any synagogue, or not any synagogue, but the vast majority. Western European looking in some ways. The majority of synagogues look something like this, at least in one sense, which is that most synagogues have windows. Most shuls have windows. Now, you might think that this is just a function of being above ground. Buildings tend to have windows. That's what buildings have. Yeah. However, yeah?
It's a function of being able to put nameplates on it.
Well, the nameplates usually go on the plaques. They don't usually. The nameplates are rarely on the windows. Otherwise, there's no reason to have a window. They're usually on the on a board on the wall.
Windows are dedicated too.
Windows are dedicated too. So I guess we'll introduce this by actually turning to a storied and very well known, even if people don't often read it, story in Tanakh. And it's the story that appears in Daniel, in Sefer Daniel, in Perek Vav Psukim Gimel for Yud Aleph. We're going to read it in English because Daniel, Sefer Daniel, is written in what language?
Aramaic.
It's written in Aramaic, exactly. So just for the sake of brevity and readability, we're going to go through it in English. And we're talking here about how Daryavesh, King Darius, was ruling over Persia at the time, and Daniel was a prophet in exile, and there were some ministers in the king's palace. You know, this is some reference to the story of Purim that we celebrated just a day ago. Today is Shushan Purim, so inside of walled cities such as Yerushalayim, Purim is actually being celebrated today, and there is a little bit of a mitzvah to have simcha, even if you didn't celebrate Purim on Shushan Purim. So you should all go about your day a little bit happier.
That's why the kids were off today.
Which kids?
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, whatever. Discussion for another time. But usually the simcha of Shushan Purim is accomplished by skipping Tachanun, for those of you who have the custom to say Tachanun. In fact, sometimes it's hard to tell. We have a rule that we don't say Tachanun on happy days, but it can be difficult to tell whether it's a happy day. We don't say Tachanun because it's a happy day, or whether it's a happy day because we didn't say Tachanun. I'll tell you, people come into shul in the morning, Shacharis, It's early in the morning. People are a little bit cranky and grumbly. They're a little bit asleep still. When someone goes straight to Kaddish after Shmona Esrei and Tachanun is skipped, everybody's walking out of shul with a spring in their step. People are whistling. They're happy as can be to be there. Presumably, whatever. It is what it is. There's a lot of laughter because there's a lot of resonance because everybody knows what I'm talking about. But in any case, today is Shushan Purim. There's a mitzvah of Simcha. This was a tangent because Purim has a little bit to do with the story, at least in structure, because King Daryavish, who was himself a Persian king, had a robust cabinet of advisors that he consulted with on all political matters, presumably. And Daniel the prophet, was held in very high regard by Daryavish HaMelech, by the king Daryavish. And this engendered some hostility between Daniel and the other royal members of Daryavish's staff, such that the following story occurred. Does anybody here know what we're about to read about, this story that we're going to look at? Famously called Daniel in the Lion's Den in contemporary lore. And this is the story. So there were three ministers, one of them Daniel, to whom these satraps, these Persian officials, reported in order that the king not be troubled. Unfortunately for them, this man Daniel surpassed the other ministers and satraps by virtue of his extraordinary spirit, and the king considered setting him over the entire kingdom. Obviously, this was conceived of as a threat by the rest of the ministry, such that they looked for some fault in Daniel's conduct in matters of state, but they could find neither fault nor corruption, inasmuch as he was trustworthy, and no negligence or corruption was to be found with him. In short, they conspired against him, hoping to remove him from his position of power. They were jealous and threatened by his success as part of this political leadership. And they couldn't. They could not unseat him. They couldn't find fault. They couldn't find corruption. They couldn't find the basis on which to accuse him of any misactivity such that he can actually get in trouble. Those men said to him, we are not going to find any fault with this Daniel unless we find something against him in connection with the laws of his God. In other words, the only way that we're going to trip Daniel up is by convincing him or having him do something that pertains to one of the halachot that govern the religion that he is so beholden to. In other words, if we can get him to slip up in something Jewish related, so then maybe that will be his downfall. So what ends up happening? So then these ministers and satraps came thronging into the king, and they said to him, King Daryavish, King Darius, live forever. All the ministers of the kingdom, the prefects, satraps, companions, governors, all the important people are in agreement that a royal ban should be issued. The Purim similarities continue. That a royal ban should be issued under sanction of an oath that whoever shall address a petition to any god or man besides you during the next 30 days shall be thrown into a lion's den. In other words, you are the king. You deserve to be conceived of in the eyes of the masses in a way fitting with your royalty and significance and esteem. So we're going to make a rule, a royal edict, that everybody has to treat you like a god for 30 days. They can only bow down to you. They can only pray to you. If they don't do it, they receive this gruesome punishment of being thrown in a lion's den, presumably to be eaten alive. So what ends up happening? They ask him to issue the ban. Thereupon, King Daryavish put the ban in writing. He said, okay, sounds good. This fellow thought it was the right thing to do. When Daniel learned that it had been put in writing, he realized what this meant for him, because if he was then to be seen praying to someone other than the king, he would be thrown into the lion's den. And Daniel obviously cannot pray to the king. The king is not a deity. That would be idolatrous. Daniel, as all Jews, can only pray towards God. So what did he do? And this is where you see it actually has something to do with the picture on the first page and the idea of davening in a room with windows. That he went to his house, in whose upper chamber he had windows made facing Jerusalem. And three times a day he knelt down, prayed, and made confessions to his God as he had always done. So what did he do? He turns to God.
In full visible action.
Well, he gets caught. He ultimately gets caught. We didn't put it down here. The Torah tells, the Navi tells us that he got caught. And he was thrown into the lion's den. The king was not happy to be doing this because the king loved Daniel and realized that it was by virtue of his own decree that Daniel was potentially going to die. But nevertheless, he had issued this edict, and he certainly didn't want to give the royalty any grounds on which to accuse him of or foment an insurrection. So he had to abide by it. Threw him into the lion's den. The lions did not eat Daniel. After the requisite time had passed, they put him in a bin, and they put a stone over the opening of the den. They rolled back the stone, and King Dariavish himself called, "Daniel, are you in there?" And Daniel said, "Yeah, I'm fine, everything's okay, I'm still alive." They raised him up out of the pit, and they lowered down some of these faulty advisors that had conceived of this plan, and they were eaten immediately by the lions. And that's how the story ends. It's a famous story, Daniel the lions. Then most people don't read it inside, don't actually read the story in the text, but that's what we just did, at least part of it. But we see from here, I think, two things. Number one is that Daniel exhibits the Jewish response towards distress, which is to turn towards God. Obviously, that's something that undergirds all of the things that we've been discussing, that it's very important when someone suffers an eis tzara, a time of duress or a time of pain, to channel that towards God in meaningful prayer. That's what we believe, in fact. According to the first year we ever gave, we saw a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban about the mitzvah to daven, what the source for the mitzvah to daven is. And the Rambam says there's a mitzvah to daven every day, the Oraita. The Ramban said, no, it's the Rabbanon, but maybe in an eis tzara, it's a Deoraita. So Rav Soloveitchik, we didn't talk about this, but Rav Soloveitchik once explained that there's actually not really a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. Yes, it's true, the Rambam says you have to daven once a day, and the Ramban says that you only have to daven the Rabbanon, but the Oraita, you only have to daven maybe in an eis tzara. He says, no. It's just that according, the Rambam also agrees that you only have to daven in an eis tzara. The Rambam just thinks that every single day is considered to be an eis tzara. And there's something that is needed, and there's something that's required every single day. And there's really not a machlokas. Okay, beautiful piece of Torah from the Rav. But barring this discussion, we know that the Jewish response to suffering is to pray. And we believe in prayer. But besides for that, obviously, philosophical underpinning of this whole thing, there's something else interesting that's going on here, which is, where does Daniel go when he davens, when he engages in this long-standing Jewish ritual of tefillah?
He's facing
Yerushalayim. He goes to a room with windows. And while that might seem incidental to the story, the Gemara actually, in source number 2, in Maseches Brachos, derives from here a halacha. Am Rabbi Chia Amar Bar Abba, Li'olam Yitpalo Adam Mevayit Sheyesh Bo Chalonos. A person should always pray in a house with windows. Why? Shene'emar V'chavin Petichan Le'e V'gomer. The Aramaic version of what we just read. That Daniel had gone up and davened in a room with windows. So, therefore, there's an obligation to daven in a room with windows. And again, to daven later in Maseches Brachos, very similar. The source number 3. Person should only daven in a room with windows. Because that's what Daniel did. When he went to daven in his attic, the pasuk made sure to tell us that he was davening in a room with windows. We learn out also from the story of Daniel that you're supposed to face towards Yerushalayim when you're davening. But in any case, there's a halacha that we derive from here, that one is supposed to daven in a room with windows. And if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, the normative codification of Jewish law, the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim Siman Sadi, the bottom of page 2, says exactly that. Sarich liftoch ptachim o chalonos keneged Yerushalayim. You have to install windows facing Yerushalayim kedei lehitpalo keregdan, in order to daven facing them. V'tov shiyu beveit haKnesset yud beis chalonos. And it's good, we'll talk about this in a couple of minutes, that the windows should be 12 in number. 12 in number. 12 windows in 12 windows. 12 windows. Okay. Oh, we're going to get there. We're going to get there.
It could be maybe no window for security too.
We'll talk about the reasons in a minute. Yeah. So we have this story in Sefer Daniel. We have a halacha which emanates from that story that you're supposed to daven in a room with windows. We have this as a halacha on the books that one should daven in a room with windows. But this raises a number of questions and indeed a number of difficulties, such as how much of a halacha is this? What if you don't have the option to daven in a room without windows? Let's say you're, what?
In a safe room.
Yeah, let's say you're in a safe room, you're going to miss Montfilo, you don't have a window. Number two, what if the window's not open? What if the room has a window, but it's covered by a shade? Is that still considered to be a room with windows? Number two, I was in a shul last week. There are many shuls that don't have windows in them, or at least one of the rooms that they use for tefillah. Oftentimes the main sanctuary will have windows, but sometimes the Beit Midrash will be on a lower level or something like that, and there will not be a window in that room. Or what if it's a window to another room? Sometimes you have... Right? Sometimes you have rooms and there's a window not to the outside, but to another room. So all of these are now questions that we have to deal with now that we've uncovered this halacha to daven in a room with windows. And we're going to get there. Any other questions that we want to... Any practical halachic questions?
The question I have, and I'm sure you'll get to it, is...
Let's start to talk about it. And the truth is that in order to answer most of these questions, we first need to understand the reason why. Granted, that's what Daniel did, and we know that we could do it to emulate Daniel, but why did Daniel do that? And why is it so important to daven in a room with windows? So we find two or three or four approaches in the Rishonim as to the reason for this halacha. The first is found in Rashi, actually, in his commentary on this Gemara. And Rashi says, why do you need windows? On the top of page number 3, Shegor min lo shiachavin libo, because it will help you concentrate. Shehu mistakel kolapei shemaim vilibo nichna. Because when you have a window, you can see outside, and you'll see the heavens, you'll see the sky, and that will inspire you. You'll remember God, and that will inspire you to have concentration in daven. So what emerges then, according to Rashi, is that we can start to put together a number of answers to our question. Because if you say the point is concentration, so that you're going to see the sky, so then a room with a window into another room should seemingly not be good enough, because there's nothing outside there. So... Again, but that's all within the Shita of Rashi. Other Rishonim have other ideas. The Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Cairo, quotes from the Tami de Rabbeinu Yonah two different ideas for the reason here. Number one is, Efshar lomar shehatam hu mipnei she'al yedei ri'iyat ha'or tidyashiv da'ato yoter v'yuchal l'chavin. It's possible that when you see the light streaming through the windows, your mind is settled and you can focus appropriately. People tend to not enjoy praying in the dark. Being in the dark itself can be scary and unsettling. And so by having a source of light, remember we have lights now, but before that, windows did a lot of the lighting up. And so to have a source of light coming in, that will help you, even at night, it's darker inside than it is outside because of the moonlight, and that will help you have a more settled mind. The nighttime is scary. In fact, if we can permit ourselves one more brief tangent, Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, who I quoted the Shabbos in my drasha, who I happen to be a big fan of, actually notes that if you look at the Shema, there's manim for Shema. Shema has to be said within a certain time frame. Right? There's the evening Shema has to be said ideally from nightfall and until Chatzos, until midnight, but really d'oraita you have until dawn. And the daytime Shema can be said, long story short, but until to note that the time allotted for the daytime Shema is far less than the time allotted for the nighttime Shema. There's only 3 halachic hours into the day for the daytime Shema, which is when kings usually sit, and that's why shuls will often announce, this is Sof Zman Kriyat Shema, because you're going to run up on it if you're in shul in the morning. But the nighttime Shema, you have from nightfall until dawn, which is 3 or 4 times that time. So why is it that the daytime Shema, you have so much less time to say? So Rav Tzadok HaKohen explains beautifully. He says, what is Shema fundamentally? Fundamentally, when you say Shema, you're being what we call Mekabel Ol Malchut Shemayim. You're accepting the yoke and the reign of God. You're making a statement of faith. So he says, well, at nighttime is a time of darkness. Nighttime is a time of uncertainty, especially before lights are commonplace. Nighttime is often a time of fear. And therefore, he says, it's much harder to be Mekabel Ol Malchut Shemayim when it's dark outside. Metaphorically speaking, also, that when someone is struggling, when someone is scared, when someone is fearful, it's much harder to accept the yoke and the reign of God. During the daytime, when things are going great in your life, it's much easier to say, oh, I love Hashem. It's much easier to say, I can accept Hashem's presence in this world during the day, i.e. when things are good. However, when things are bad, when things are nighttime, so then it's much harder, and therefore the Torah gives us a longer amount of time to do it. So that's Rav Tzadok's explanation, a beautiful explanation of why the Zmanim are different. But in any case, Rabbeinu Yonah's understanding, Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah's understanding, is that by seeing it, you're going to be able to focus better. O Nami, or maybe, Rotsa Lomar, Shayu Petuchin Achalonos Kerian Keneged HaMizrach, maybe it's that the window should be facing Yerushalayim. Kedi'it Bikra, Neged Yerushalayim, Yibnesha Al Havtach, Azot Yichavi Bitfilaso, Keneged HaMakom Yoter Vitiya Tfilaso Rutsuya Mikubelis. Because what's going to happen? It's not just that you need windows, it's that you dafka need windows facing towards Yerushalayim. Because when you look out your window and you can see the direction of Israel outside in the world, it will remind you of the Makom HaMikdash and Israel, and you'll be able to feel more intensely about your tefillos. Okay, so three reasons for this. Number one is Rashi. Rashi says it's so that you'll concentrate better. You'll look at God and you'll be submissive and you'll remember God's awesomeness and you'll be able to concentrate better on your tefillah. Number two, Rabbeinu Yonah's first idea, it'll help you be a little bit more settled. So that similar idea, really, to Rashi, you can be a little bit more settled when you're davening with light. And but for Rashi, it's your ability to look outside. For Rabbeinu Yonah, it's what's coming into the room that really makes the difference. And then the other idea is that no, it's not a din in the windows. It's about having windows facing Yerushalayim. That's an integral part of this. And the idea is that you'll be able to face in Yerushalayim, and that will also be ma'orer. It will arouse your concentration. Yeah. But there's a big disagreement in the posting about how those decisions get made. Okay. Answers to these Rishonim give, we can start to piece together according to their understandings how we would answer the practical questions that we ask, like can you have a window into another room? So again, according to Rashi, who says that it's about looking high heavenward, so a window into another room is not good enough. But according to Rabbeinu Yonah, so if that room has light in it and it's lighting up the room that you're in, so that would be good enough, seemingly, according to these Rishonim. It's interesting to note that there's a big discussion about whether this applies only in private, in a home, or also in the synagogue. Meaning, does the obligation to daven in a room with windows apply in shul or not? Now, seemingly all of the reasons that we gave apply also in a shul. In a shul also, facing towards Eretz Yisrael would give you concentration and intention just as much as facing Eretz Yisrael would in your home. And the importance of light is or inspiration from heaven is just as important in the home as it is in the shul, presumably. However, Daniel, the example text for this entire discussion, really only happens in private. He's not davening in a community. He's davening by himself, seemingly, in his attic. So that's what the text says. So when does this apply in shul? So the truth is that there was a tshuva written to the Rambam, and a group of people in some communities sent the Rambam a very brief tshuva, and they said, what's the deal with davening in a room with windows? What's going on with that? When does it apply? What do we have to know? The Gemara is a little cryptic. It only says one sentence. So what do we do with that? So the Rambam in his tshuvos in Siman Reish Tet Zayin, in the middle of page 3, answers this question. And he says, Bate Knesiot v'hamikomos ha-miyuchadim l'tfilas tzibor, that synagogues and places that have a designation as being used for communal prayer, ein masnim hen chalonos v'ein mashgichim behem. We don't have to put windows there. Ve'ein divrei Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Chanina, who was the one in the Gemara that said you need to daven in a place with windows, that only applies, the Rambam writes, ella biyachid hamitpalel beveto. That only applies to a person who is davening in their home. Kimo shahaya osa Daniel. And that's what Daniel was doing, Aleph HaShalom. However, that does not apply to people who are davening in a shul. It's clear from the Rambam. He says specifically that that only applies to somebody who's davening at home. And therefore, in a shul, when you're davening in a community, Daniel only taught us about davening one-on-one, to you and God. So that seems to be the only reason to do this. And therefore, the Rambam seems to say that that only applies when you're by yourself. And therefore, we can justify, seemingly, the custom of many shuls to not daven in a place with windows. The Kesef Mishnah, in his commentary on the Rambam, in Hilchos Tefillah Perakei Halacha Vav, I believe, quotes this. The Kaf HaChaim, in his commentary, very important Sephardic commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, quotes this. Sock. And therefore, in Sephardic places, it's very common that you will have Batei Knesiot without windows. Because the Rambam, who himself was a Sephardic rabbi, and many other Sephardic Achronim, have spoken and cited this Rambam, at least the Kaf HaChaim, as a proof. And in fact, Rambam. However, the Mishnah Berurah writes that Afilu Beves HaKnesses, right below the Rambam, Kshemipali Matzibor Nachal Nizal Bezeh. In a shul setting, you really should be careful about this. Even if you're in a shul setting, the Kol Shekein Shemipal Vayis BiYachidi, the Tzarich Nizal Bezeh LeChachila. You have to be careful about this even more so when you're davening home alone, to daven in a room with windows. However, in a shul, the Mishnah Berurah says you should still be concerned about this halacha, and therefore Ashkenazim generally try to be makpid to not daven in a room without windows. Sephardim too sometimes, but again, there's a little bit more to rely on in their ballpark. But Ashkenazim tend to daven in a place with windows, whether at home or in the synagogue. So does this apply in shul? Well, it depends on who you ask a little bit. But Lamaisa Ashkenazim generally try to do that. Okay, question number two that we'll address today is what direction should the windows face? Now, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the second understanding of Rabbeinu Yonah, it's clear, right? Which way should the windows face? Towards Eretz Yisrael, which would be east or so if you're in Philadelphia. So you should face towards Eretz Yisrael. The question is that if you look in the Gemara that we cited, if you look in the Gemara had never said this. The Gemara just said you should just daven in a room with windows. That's all the Gemara said. So the Kesef Mishnah writes on the bottom of page number 3 that Rabbeinu Manoach already addressed this. The Gemara only said that you should daven in a place with windows. It doesn't say which way the windows have to be facing. But he says, no. When the Torah told us that Daniel did this exact thing, so Shitzarech Lios Keneged Yerushalayim. Daniel did it facing Yerushalayim, so we learn out from what Daniel did that it also has to be facing Yerushalayim, even though it's not explicitly mentioned in the Gemara. Okay, fine. So according to Rabbeinu Manoach, they should be facing Yerushalayim. And in fact, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Sadi, that's what he writes, that Tzarich Liftoach Pachati Mo Chalonos Keneged Yerushalayim, Kedei Sheit Palo Kenegdan. They should be facing Yerushalayim. And the Mishnah Berurah writes that if you're going to follow this thing to do, that you should put 12 windows in the shul, so they don't all have to be facing Yerushalayim. Ela le'ezet shat sheyirtze v'tenai sheyeh gam b'tzad shemit palo l'kabal Yerushalayim. They should just be, some of them should be facing Yerushalayim. You don't have to have all of them facing Yerushalayim, but some of them should be facing Yerushalayim in order to fulfill this dictum that we learn out from Daniel. Okay, so we've addressed a number of the contemporary questions, which way the windows have to face, whether or not this applies in a synagogue. You can also see how, according to the various Rishonim, whether it would apply to things like a window within that just looks into another room. When it comes to about the halacha to daven in a room with windows, let's just close off by sharing, I think, a beautiful insight courtesy of Rav Yehuda Amital. Who is Rav Yehuda Amital? He was the Rosh Yeshiva, one of the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion in the Gush. So there's an interesting story in the last page that's told about Rav Yehuda Amital. Story goes that when the Beit Midrash for his yeshiva was first built, the architect wanted to make it without windows with a view of the surrounding landscape, meaning they wanted to make the Beit Midrash a windowless room. The rationale was that this windowless design made the building fit in better with the environment. Looked more natural to not have windows. Okay, fine. Rav Amital's response was typical of his perpetual emphasis on the human element in serving God. He said it is the students, rather than the building, who must fit in with the environment. In other words, the place of Torah study is not meant to be a place where students are completely isolated from the outside world. The Beit Midrash is a refuge, but one that retains a constant awareness of the life of the nation and the world around it. The idea here of Amital was worried that symbolically not having windows in a Beit Midrash creates the wrong impression and it's bad chinuch, quite frankly. Because when people are studying Torah, they should not be blind to what's happening in the world around them. And windows, which symbolize a portal to the outside world, are an important part of remembering that what you do in the Torah study realm has to be anchored or connected to what's going on in the world. You're not just supposed to shield yourself from what's happening in life and in the world when you study Torah, but you should be using your Torah to interact with the world, to connect with the world, to make sense of the world. There's an interface between Torah and the rest of the world, and to have a windowless Beit Midrash is to negate that, is to cut off those two things and keep them completely siloed. And Rabbi Dr. Asher Meyer, in his article that we took this from Windows and Shul on the OU Torah website, writes, a similar insight can be applied to a place of prayer. While prayer is a private confrontation between the individual and God, the subject of our prayers include earthly matters such as health and livelihood. Having windows reminds us that our prayers are not meant to be isolated from the world outside. Of course, it is critical that the view should not be of anything distracting or immodest. Certainly that's true. But having windows when we have a shul, maybe this is another reason, is there to remind us that what we're asking for should not be isolated from what's going on in the outside world. If we show up to shul and we're only thinking about ourselves, you're done with Shmona Esrei, you put in your personal requests for whatever they are, and they only included you, that's not what this is all about. It's not what this is all about. Tefillah is supposed to be a way that we lift each other up, that we connect with each other, that we try to help each other with all the things that everybody's going through. And it behooves us to daven not just for the things that we need, but for the things that they need. In fact, our sages tell us that if you daven for someone else, you'll get answered for your own things first. And therefore, by having windows in a shul, we symbolize that it's not just about us. But we should not be disconnected from what's going on in the rest of the world. If there are people out there who need us, we should be remembering that in our own tefillos. And the windows, which serve as an entry portal to the rest of the world, help to remind us of that. I thought that was a beautiful insight from Rabbi Dr. Asher Meyer. And now we know a little bit about this, I think, esoteric halacha of davening in a windowless room. And Be'ezras Hashem will pick up in 2 weeks from today at 2 p.m. Thank you all for coming. And if you want to hang on to these, you can. Otherwise, you can put them back up here. And I'll stick around for a couple of minutes for questions. Thank you.